From ransomware attacks to supply chain compromises, the Cyber Talks podcast will delve into the world of the latest cyber threats and attacks impacting businesses globally. Join us as we speak with C-level executives and security practitioners about the cyber risks affecting their business and how they're addressing these challenges. CyberTalks is presented by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. To learn how eSentire can help your team build a more responsive security operation, visit eSentire.com. I'm one of your hosts, Tia Hopkins, the field CTO and chief cyber risk strategist at eSentire. Hey everyone, thanks for listening in to yet another episode of Cyber Talks. Today, I'm joined by Greg Crowley, eSentire's Chief Information Security Officer, for a discussion on how you can better demonstrate the value of MDR to your business leaders and the board. In this conversation, we're going to dive into current industry trends we're seeing, why it's important to shift to a cyber resilience mindset, how you can drive resilience at your company with MDR, and how you can demonstrate the value of MDR to your leadership team. So let's dive in. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today. My name is Tia Hopkins. I am eSentire's Chief Cyber Resilience Officer and Field CTO, where I focus on helping our customers build resilient cybersecurity programs. Here with me today is Greg Crowley, eSentire's Chief Information Security Officer. And we're really excited to chat today. We're going to be discussing demonstrating the value of MDR. So, Greg, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Tia, it is always a pleasure.
Thanks. Well, I mean, we've got a lot to cover today, so I think we should dive right in and start with some of the trends we're seeing. We'll start with trends from a budgetary perspective during a recession, just to start with a light topic, you know. but I think it goes without saying that businesses are becoming more conservative in their spending in general, right? But when it comes to security, we're seeing budgets haven't necessarily decreased, but leaders are expected to do more with less, especially due to things like increased complexity in infrastructure and reduced headcount. What do you think about that?
Well, I hear this a lot, and I think it's true. But honestly, I feel like I've been up against this for my whole career. I think security has always been a struggle to get funding. I think it's actually become a lot easier in recent years. You know, if we go back in time a little bit to the last recession, 2007 to 2009, I think there were cuts in budget at that time. But I don't think that's really, it's not an option today. Cybersecurity is a top business risk. There really, you can't be cutting back budget and spend, but you do have to manage it wisely. And yes, cybersecurity leaders are being asked to do more with less, even if that means keeping the budget flat. There's always new threats, risks that come about.
Yeah, no, those are all great points. And I mean, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, one of the keys to maximizing the budget is cost-effective spending, right? So some studies are showing that security leaders are focused on doing things like consolidating point solutions, and the services they retain have to be cost-effective and also backed by data-informed business cases, right? Because they have to be able to defend it internally, I'd imagine. So I'd love your perspective on that.
Well, you always want to be able to justify it or to defend it if needed. So you want to do your due diligence as a security leader and really choosing the right investment to make. There's always been a conversation, whether it's in IT or security, of you go best in breed versus consolidated. And obviously, I think it's easier to manage if you have everything in one place, but you don't want to sacrifice a protection or a defense or anything crucial just because you want to go with a single provider. So I think there's always that balance. At least that's the approach I've always taken. I like to find that balance. For me, what I like is if you have the ability to not necessarily stick with just one provider, but at least have some form to get all those signals, all that telemetry come into a single source to really contextualize it, to synthesize the information, to process it, to bubble up what matters, you know, that's your kind of single pane of glass. That's your consolidated view. And that's where I think you really get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say that sounds kind of like cheating, like best of both worlds, because to your point, striking that balance between, you know, having all of the point solutions kind of solidated maybe under one vendor and having a single pane of glass versus if something goes wrong with that vendor, you know, being subject to whatever goes wrong because you haven't diversified your stack. So having a solution that consolidates even disparate technologies does definitely sound like the best of both worlds. I totally agree with you there. And so this last point, before we change gears, I think is an interesting one. Gartner research actually shows security leaders are facing burnout and really unsustainable levels of stress. And that by 2025, 25% of cybersecurity leaders will pursue different roles entirely. So I don't know if you're on the market to become, you know, the next big singer out there or what that looks like. But what's your experience been like with this?
So I don't know if you noticed, but as you asked me that question, I didn't even realize I was doing it, but I just happened to look down at my couch and I see myself going like this and rubbing my neck. I was like, oh yeah, that's the stress knot that I'm kind of rubbing out of my neck right there. Yeah, it's a tough battlefront to live in, you know, to all the defenders out there, you know, my hat goes off to you. It's not easy. It is very stressful. And if you're a security leader, whether it's a CISO or any, whatever your title may be leading up, you know, that blues team or just, you know, the security posture for defending your security posture for the company, it's tough. It's tough because a lot of it goes unseen and the risks are just relentless. The good guys and defenders have to kind of play by the rules where bad guys by definition really don't. They don't care about the rules. So it's a lot of stress and there's a lot on the line. It's the company's livelihood is on the line. So yeah, I think one way that, you know, security leaders can best deal with this is finding the right company, to be honest. Whether you need to have good support from leadership and a company that really understands security. And whether you do or don't work in one of those companies, you need to have support. Because like anything in life, if you have that support, it makes things a lot easier. So go find security partners, go find those teams that can really help you make your life and job a little bit easier.
Yeah. No, those are all fantastic points. And I mean, it almost seems like a never ending battle, which I'm sure you touched on where, you know, I refer to it as the game of cat and mouse, right? Where you just don't know what the day is going to look like, which side of that fight you're going to be on. And you're looking for a goalpost, but it seems to move every day. So no singing for you. It sounds like I thought you were going to give us a hint on your next album, but maybe not.
I didn't take the bait on that one. I was going to go into song a little bit, but I opted not to.
Okay. Totally understand if you've got to keep that confidential. We'll get you back on here. You can tell us all about it at the right time. Nice. All right. So listen, you know, moving on to our next topic, I'm going to start to talk about some trends around the types of threats we're seeing. And as if budget concerns aren't enough to keep security leaders up at night, I'm willing to bet the constant game of cat and mouse with the adversaries probably is. So some of the most notable things our threat response unit has identified in their research are things like the as a service business model, where cybercrime groups basically offer initial access as a service and things like malware as a service. So we're seeing an increase in the number of initial access brokers out there, and the top initial access distribution vectors observed in the past year are browser-based attacks, email, and remote exploits. So, you know, email used to be all the rave, but now we've got to worry about users and browsers, and of course, remote exploits as well. We've also seen notable trends in ransomware, with increases in targets of high revenue organizations and critical infrastructure industries. And then lastly, geopolitical tensions and rise of nation state sponsored cyber attacks using things like wiper malware, where the sole purpose is to erase data beyond the point that it can be recovered. And that's just scary, right? Especially with critical infrastructure or highly regulated industries. So Greg, when I think about all these things, tight budgets, lean security teams, increased complexity, and relentless attackers, I feel for you, man. I really do.
You should. I appreciate that. And by the way, all those things that you mentioned, before you get into the question that's coming, I suppose, but all the things you mentioned, right, they keep building on top. Like those old tricks, those old tactics and techniques of, you know, the business email compromise, the phishing, the ones they still account for the majority of the breaches out there, right? So it's not like you forget about those old ones. It's just more new ones keep on coming, getting piled onto that mountain of worry. Yeah, and the wiperware. We're seeing this more now with geopolitical tensions. But that's even been around for a while. I remember that's actually one of the ways I got some budget approved way back in my former position, was that it's publicly known, so I can mention this, but there was Sony Pictures had a movie come out, and there was not all nation states agreed with this movie being released, and Sony Pictures got hit with wiper malware, and it really wiped them out. And that division of the company kind of went back to pen and paper, and it was brutal for them. And myself at the time, being not at that company, but at another media and entertainment company, it really woke the world up, right? Saying that, okay, so nation states aren't just going after other nation states. They can be going after an entertainment company. They could really be going after any company. The motives are financially related, and that's where you're going to get ransomware. But wiper malware, they don't even care. They just want to wipe you out and ruin your life. So yeah, that does add to my worries.
Goodness. Yeah. And I mean, if, you know, think about all the things that I was saying, just stacking up. I mean, I imagine figuring out where to start in order to have like the greatest impact and keep you as safe as you can be while you kind of dig through other things to shore up. It's got to feel a lot like trying to boil the ocean. I do think, though, that part of the answer is a mindset shift from just managing cyber risk to more of a mindset around building cyber resilience. So I'd like to tease this out a bit, and then we'll get back to you because you're the star of the show here, of course. So is that cool?
That's great.
All right, cool. You're way too kind. Okay. So let's start with the definition of risk management, right? So risk management is basically identifying an organization's assets, assessing the risk against those assets, and then working out a way to reduce or mitigate those risks. So far, so good. I want you to keep me honest here.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. All right. Now, cyber resilience is an organization's ability to anticipate, withstand, recover from, and adapt to cyber threats. Okay. Now, that has a very different outcome in my mind than simply managing cyber risk. And so cyber risk is really important, but I really want to highlight some key differences from an outcome perspective. And then we'll get back to you. But if we change the conversation to cyber resilience away from just managing cyber risk, then we can shift the question from how safe are we to how ready are we? I talk to many security leaders. I walk to the boardroom and the question is, are we safe from insert latest attack that was seen on news here? And my answer is, I mean, it's a cheeky one, of course, but it's, you know, unless you're going to unplug from the internet and to your point, go back to pen and paper, you're not safe. So I do think it comes down to how ready you are, especially if we agree in general that it's a matter of if not when. And so back to the point around risk management, then of identifying risk and then figuring out, you know, what to mitigate, how to mitigate, it puts you in a position where you're preparing for what you know to prepare for. But what about the blind spots? What about the things you haven't seen or the controls that you couldn't afford to put in place? When resilience prepares you for the worst case scenario. You talked about, you know, it's not necessarily the same attacks coming up. It's always something new, something different. The adversaries are relentless. So, you know, identifying and mitigating risk can feel like just an endless game of whack-a-mole. Whereas if you're improving your ability to be resilient, no matter what comes your way, you just kind of feel like you got some milestones and you're getting a little better and moving on. And then the last point I'll make here is the overall outcome. With risk management, you're essentially reducing cyber risk, but that does not ensure business continuity the way improving cyber resilience does, because you'll be focused on ensuring the continuity and becoming more resilient just to ensure that you're minimizing or preventing downtime. So you agree with me there?
Yes. So I would say that risk management and reducing risk doesn't go away. That's an outcome, and that's something you have to do as part of the job. But it's tougher to communicate. I really like it. Really resonates with me. Cyber resilience, and you know, this is not something new that's thought up, but it is something that people are starting to really use or understand more now. You mentioned anticipate, withstand, recover, then adapt. But if it's really about how resilient are we? Because we're still going to use our risk registers. We're going to keep track of the risks for the company, and we're going to do our best to mitigate them. But if you try and do it that way, it's like managing each little task. It's not a strategy. And I like the strategic approach of resilience. I always hated, still hate, but I always hated the question, all right, how safe are we? That's an impossible question to answer. They really only one answer they want to hear. And it's like if I was to ask you about, okay, Tia, how healthy are you? Okay, well, all right. You know, you're an athlete or former athlete. I don't know how you would consider yourself, but all right.
Not as healthy as I was then. There we go.
All right. So you exercise, maybe you take your vitamins, right? You're feeling good. So you think you're healthy. All right. I feel good. I feel healthy. But you might not know what's actually going on inside, right? And so it's the same thing with security. So how safe are we? You don't really know, right? But the best you could do is do those things I talk about. Exercise, eat well, take your vitamins, say your prayers. Now I sound like, you know, an old 80s character. But I think if you look at the anticipate, all right, we know what threats are out there. Okay. How prepared are we? Do we do a gap assessment? Are we doing security awareness training? What's the worst case scenario out there that you mentioned? Okay, say ransomware or wiperware. All right, well, have we run tabletops? Have we segmented our network? Okay, are we able to detect these things, right? You know, and if we detect it, are we able to respond right away? And if the response, can it be isolation? Can we kind of contain that threat? And how quickly can we contain that threat? All these things are talking about how resilient are you? And then worst case scenario, something gets in, wipes out extremely quick, right? How quickly can we recover? Before you get to that, you want to get it to, honestly, to be better, more resilient, you want to really minimize that downtime, that business impact. So you want to be able to be resilient. So the point that if you have an incident, which an incident of some sort is inevitable, that it's going to really be minimized. It's going to just maybe hopefully hit one computer. Maybe it's just going to be for a little blip of time before it gets isolated. You want to really stymie that attack and not let it get too far. And not interrupt your business. And that's the difference between resilience, having that strategic approach, and just managing to lower a bunch of tasks of risk items.
I like it. You made that much more of an eloquent statement than I did. I appreciate that.
That doesn't happen often, so.
So, I mean, if an organization's working toward building cyber resilience, which they should be, because I mean, I'm sold now that you've talked about it, but I'm thinking they've got two options, right? They can do it themselves or they can outsource. How should leaders be thinking about this?
Well, what's the outcome? I think it goes back to, do you have a risk of, do you have 24/7 coverage? Or do you have somebody that's able to understand the alerts that are coming on holidays, after hours, on weekends. So yeah, if you have two options of do it yourself or outsource. And I can speak from experience as well. I've been in that seat before where I've had to make this choice. And a lot of companies will start off with some type of security person maybe, or somebody in IT that has security responsibility. And as the company grows, so does the responsibility. So they eventually have to look at, all right, how can we do right by the company and do our due care and protect and defend the company from the number one business risk, which is cyber risk. All right, well, we need to have a SOC. Okay, somebody that's watching, right, getting feeds from our logs, our endpoint, our network, our cloud. And then as those things come in, if you start taking them all in by yourself as a team or building out a SOC, you're going to be flooded very quickly. The better you do security, the more sources that you're giving to analyze, that's going to generate more alerts and it's going to flood yourself and or your team. Okay, well then, you know, it's not just good enough 9 to 5. So you also have to have those after hours and weekends and holidays that I talked about. All right, well, anybody paying attention knows that it is tough to come by cybersecurity professionals nowadays. And if you have anything in the cloud, try and find a cybersecurity professional that also knows cloud security. That's an even smaller pool you're pulling from. Now staff that, and you need what, at least 3 shifts to go 24 hours a day, okay, and holidays, etc. People get sick, so you can't have just one person on each shift. So there's a lot to consider here. Now you got to make sure those people are trained. There's a lot of churn in the industry, and there's like 3.5 million unfulfilled jobs out there. It's tough. It's hard to maintain a good team, just regular business hours, trying to add a full coverage. It's extremely tough. All right, so that moves you to option 2. Option 1, just not a good option. It really doesn't make financial sense for almost any size company. So option 2, you need help. You need somebody to help. You still need internal person or people. There's always security things. There's always a team that is going to be needed locally, but you need the help. You need somebody to augment that team. So look for an outsource. I think you have 2 options in that respect too. And again, this is something that I faced earlier on in my career as well. You go down the road of a traditional MSSP. I ran into shortcomings there. I wasn't getting the value that I wanted. I wasn't getting the outcomes. Alerts were coming. They were getting the alerts, but we still wouldn't see the alerts or get their information until the next day when we came in. The guidance that was given was very basic. It was just kind of taking alerts, throwing them over the fence. It just wasn't the outcome I wanted. So what else was out there? And this is going back to 2017, 2018, when I was looking, what else is out there other than the traditional MSSP? And that is when I discovered MDR, Managed Detection and Response. And that is what you want. You want the detection and response. It made so much sense when I finally stumbled across it and then stumbled across eSentire as well. And because that's what really matters is you want to be able to have the security professionals that can take that burden off of you as a company. Most companies are not a security company, so leave that to the experts. Have the analysts, have the people behind the scenes at the MDR be able to configure everything, to take all this telemetry, put it into a funnel, only get what really matters, what are the true positives, and then do the analysis. And then you set up rules of engagement and say, okay, if we see this, it's known malware, it's on this environment, isolate it right away, right? Now, my team might not even be engaged right away. We've given the power to somebody to really stop that attack, stop that threat right there, right away. And then, yes, escalate. Let the internal team know. Let my team know what's going on. So if you just look at it from a financial perspective, it doesn't make sense to do it in-house. You're not going to be able to keep up with those personnel and technology challenges. You'd have to buy a lot of technology just to do what a provider is built to do. And then when you're going down the road of outsourcing, really take the time to look and find the right partner.
Now that those are,
I know,
really,
I said a lot there.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's a lot of great insights. And you know, in the early days of managed detection response, I was on the other side of this, doing a lot of educating on the differences between, you know, an MDR provider and the traditional approach of an MSSP. And of course, the big one, the big differentiator, as you mentioned, is the completeness of the response, right? Like taking action versus tossing an alert over the fence. But there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes too, right? Like truly operationalizing threat intelligence. I mean, for a lot of organizations, sure, you've got threat intelligence coming into your point solutions, and maybe you even have a threat intelligence platform, but the research and level of effort that goes into doing things like curating that information or creating novel detections and conducting proactive threat sweeps, I mean, that's not something a traditional MSSP or even some MDR providers actually do well, right?
No, it's an excellent point. The threat intel and operationalizing the threat intel is key, right? There's threat intelligence feeds you can get, but what are you going to do with those threat intelligence feeds? How do they relate to your environment? okay, is somebody targeting us? Is somebody targeting our industry? What do we need to know, right? So you want the experts that know how to do the research, that know how to put it into the signatures, rule sets, detections that are protecting your company. You want somebody that knows your environment. So just getting a feed, that's like reading the news. I can read the news as well. That's not the key piece. The key piece is doing, is operationalizing it. If there's threats out there, okay, can I sweep my whole environment? Can that company, can eCentire, yes, sweep our environment for the signs of IOCs, indicators of compromise, and do the active threat hunting? Yes, that's the difference. That's when, and by the way, it's not, and they're not shifted either, right? You got to make sure that threat intelligence is also available around the clock. You know, things break on holiday weekends. You want to make sure that you're covered and having those threat hunts done around the clock as well.
1,000%. I think another point that can't go understated is, you know, traditional MSSPs, they also have limited visibility, right? Because they're fully reliant on a SIEM platform, you know, versus ingesting various types of raw telemetry across the entire infrastructure, whether it's on-prem, hybrid, or cloud environment. And that results in more high fidelity alerts and quicker, more accurate response when you take that approach. Is that your experience as well?
It is. The fidelity of the alerts makes all the difference. Traditional SIEMs aren't going to have the human intelligence. It's not going to have people that breathe it day in, day out, understand the nuances. So absolutely, 100% agree.
Well, this has been phenomenal. I'm going to change gears on you again. Completely changing gears. We're getting away from threats, kind of getting away from budgets, but we're going to talk about the CFO a bit. But you know, there's a lot of opinions out there on the appropriate reporting structure for a CISO or for an individual that has ownership of the security practice. Who do you report to, Greg?
I report to the CFO.
Okay, great. I think. And, you know, I imagine CFOs care a lot about how, you know, cybersecurity investments are producing a positive return. In your opinion, do you think CFOs have, you know, different priorities than security leaders? And if so, do you think they should be different?
They should be aligned. They shouldn't have different priorities. I think as whether you're a CISO or a security leader, or if you're a CFO, right, and you have this obligation to the business, right? And as I think I mentioned briefly before, cyber risk is the number one business risk. And CFOs should understand that as well. And the objective is not to spend as much money as possible to make sure you're absolutely as secure as possible. The idea is to be resilient. The idea is to have keep the business generating money. The idea is to protect revenue, allow the business to keep making money and not lose money and not have its brand or reputation ruined. So I think they're if they're not aligned, that's a problem. I think usually there is alignment. They just have to learn to speak the same language.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and you know, I do have more conversations where there's a perceived lack of alignment, I'll say, versus yes, we're fully aligned and we're good. So for those leaders that might be struggling to either, you know, figure out how to communicate with their leader or getting their leaders on the same page, how do you build that alignment with your CFO or whoever your leader is?
Sure. I think you have to discuss, you know, what a cyber incident could cost your company. You have to be able to articulate the cyber risk in terms with meaningful KPIs in order to demonstrate the effectiveness of the investments that are the, either the investments that you currently have or the investments that you're seeking. You really need to speak the same language. Obviously, CFOs understand cost. I think the CFO position has been around the CFO, the CEO, those typical business leader positions have been around a long time. And because of that, they're used to speaking the language of the business, and they're used to speaking dollars and cents. And as a security leader, you have to understand that's where they operate best, right? So you have to try and meet them on that playing field. And so if you're talking about, we have this cyber risk, which is a business risk. This is what this type of threat poses. Here's what it can cost in reputation. Now, here's what it could cost in downtime. If ransomware to hit, and if it hits 5 people, 100 people, however many people, if we are down for 4 hours, 12 hours, 7 days, what are the estimated costs there? And if you can start talking about that, then you can start reframing the conversation to resilience again. You want to say, all right, well, how can we improve our resilience so that we minimize the impact if any of these things happen?
I love that. And one of the things you touched on that I hear a lot and speak about a lot that leaders struggle with is the KPIs and metrics around all of that. So, you know, you're speaking the same language to your point, but now what do you say, right? Now that they're listening and now that there's some buy-in, we're going to lean in, we're going to work together, you know, what do you say in order to meet your leader where they are to make sure they really understand what you need? So what are some of those critical KPIs and metrics security leaders should consider in your opinion?
Right. And again, going back to that resilience mindset, if you're focusing on, say, mean time to detect, if you have an indicator of compromise, if you have a security alert, what is the mean time to detect? And then what's the mean time to contain that detection? How quickly can an incident be responded to, be handled, be isolated? You want to see, all right, how many threats or how many incidents were automatically blocked, really bringing down that time or the exposure or chance of the threat spreading throughout the environment. So again, mean time to detect, mean time to contain, mean time to respond, automated blocking, how many exploitable vulnerabilities are out there? How quickly is the company addressing those exploitable vulnerabilities? Do they have a plan in place? And then you probably also want to look and compare it to whatever industry you may be in. How are other companies in your vertical compared to your security posture? Those are a few of the areas. And another way too is, let's say you want to judge the value of your investment. Let's take security awareness and training. Well, how do you know it's really working? Well, if you're running phishing simulations and you start monitoring that over time and you kind of come up with a score. You could say, how many clicks are we getting over time? Is it getting better or worse? How many people are actually reporting? Because it's, in my opinion, just as important, if not more important, to report if you clicked or you received something than tracking the metric of did the person actually click. So if you take those two and you see that clicks are going down, reporting is going up, then you have a pretty good indicator that your investment in your security awareness training is working. And I think if you look to do that across your different programs, and that's proving the value of your security program to your leadership.
I like it. I mean, those are all fantastic points. I mean, I think you just gave a bit of a masterclass here. Should have been taking notes. But I do love that you always bring it back to resilience because that's what it's about. You know, I think that we want to the earlier points that you and I both made, you want to limit the downtime. You want to prevent it, right? But if it has to occur, you want to be able to quickly recover, right? You want to be able to withstand what's going on, and getting your leaders to align with you in that thinking is really important because the investments being made are going into that. And so I love that because if we think back to the definition of cyber resilience, which is simply an organization's ability to anticipate, withstand, recover from, and adapt to an adverse cyber event. If you replace adverse cyber event with pandemic or economic downturn, the business and security outcomes that you expect, they're eerily similar. And now a conversation can be had because you've met your leaders where they are and you're having the same conversation and they understand that cyber resilience is business resilience and where to tuck that into their thinking and how to look at their expectations on a return when they invest. So yeah, I really appreciate your thoughts on that. So I'll kick it back to you. We talked about a lot. This has been great. Any final thoughts here?
I do. And going back to lessons learned from my career, when I made the switch, when I had to make that decision of, okay, do I expand my team and build out a 24/7 SOC and the full coverage and do it in-house? We currently had an MSSP. It wasn't working out for us. We knew we needed a better outcome. And I think in going back to the earlier conversation, sometimes cyber leaders might have in their head, they have to stick with within a certain budget. And a lot of times they do. But what I don't assume that your CFO won't spend more money if you can't demonstrate the value. For example, we were spending money on an MSSP, but we weren't getting the value. We weren't getting the outcome. That was wasted money. A lot of CFOs would be okay with spending a little bit more money, but getting a whole lot better value and a whole lot more outcome, and really taking your cybersecurity resilience from whatever, a 2 to a 5, you know, and that it's the value and it's the outcome. That's what they want to see. So it was honestly the easiest sell that I ever had to make, you know, in my career, was going and investing in an MDR solution.
That's fantastic. I appreciate that. And I'm sure someone out there is going to take that advice and go test their CFO, hopefully soon. Well, listen, they should, right? I really appreciate the time that you spent here chatting about this with me today. It's so rich, especially coming from someone that deals with this day in, day out, that has gone through the transition from, you know, the traditional managed security services outcome to the managed detection and response outcome and what that brings and how that helps organizations build resilience. So thank you again, Greg. And thanks so much to everyone for joining us in this conversation today. We appreciate your time and we hope the conversation was valuable for you.
Thanks to you.
To learn how eSentire can help your team build a more responsive security operation, visit eSentire.com.